also was going to be one more. We'll get started in about 1 minute. Okay, let's... Mariella, are you going to be... Okay. No, thank you. I'm going to get started with the Hebrew letters, as we have done in all of our classes. We bring in the energy of creation with the Hebrew letters, and... also the energy of Kedusha, of holiness, the Zohar. So we're going to do that. If you hear any background noise, it's just people getting settled in. Ana b'kora, yidulat shemincha, tatir tzerula, alafet gino yutat tzadi, ayin and bet. Kufre shayin sintet nun, nagibor, dorshe yichudecha, kevavat shamrem, Nun gimadalad yud kafshin. Farchem tarem, lachamei tzikatecha, tamid gamlem. Betet resh, sadi taf gimel. Het kuf bet, tet nulayim. Hasin kadosh, berov tuvcha, na'ela datecha. Yachid ge'e, lamcha p'nei, zokrei kedushatecha. Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf. Shavatenu Kabel, Ushma Tziakatenu, Yodea Ta'alumot. In the last verse I will say out loud, but it normally is supposed to be said silently. But for the purposes of teaching, Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Le'olam Vayet. And now I will read a verse from the Zohar. Vayhi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kunanei Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kunanehu. Vayhi Tema Veha Ketiv Vehu Ben Yish Mitzri Ha Vadai Had Hava Vopir Simo Kara Viktiv Vehu Ben Yish Mitzri Zomer Shem Imo Shlomit Bat Divri Lamate Dan. You may ask, why is it written? And he was the son of an Egyptian man. And he answers, certainly there was one, and the verse made him known as written, and he was the son of an Egyptian man. And his mother's name was Shlomit, the daughter of Divri, of the tribe of Dan. They were observant in Egypt to fulfill being fruitful and multiplying, as it is written. And the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly. Assuredly, the children of Israel were guarded in Egypt from all these. the impurity of menstruation, foreign women, and from killing children. Therefore the children of Israel came into Egypt, and the children of Israel went out to freedom. It is written, and these are the names of the children of Israel who came, because came signifies not to remain, but rather that they would go out from there. And this is through the merit of observing the three things mentioned above. The verse in the Zohar is explaining why there was a redemption from Egypt, why it was necessary to go into Egypt, which is essentially building a nation. And a nation can only be built in an area of tension, of not negativity per se, but under stress. You could only grow and come together and unify under an outside stress or an internal stress. But unity is a creation. It's a process to achieve it. And that's really what the verse is talking about. So does anybody have any questions from last week? The basic idea of last week, we were teaching that the world is an illusion. And we had the back test. And I don't know if you... The nine dots. Yeah, we had it on Sunday. I brought it with me.
Yeah, well, we didn't do it.
No, I said we'd come back and give you the answer this week. So, and the basic idea of the dot test, and everybody struggles with it. We don't have copies in front of us, but you really don't need it. Visualize nine dots, three rows of three. And the only way you can connect all nine dots with four lines is to go outside of the box that is created by the nine dots. When everybody looks at the nine dots, just as you looked at the letters F and let your ego go forward, you look at the nine dots and you mentally say, I have to do it within the box. And the reason that I give you this test and this explanation is really to stress Kabbalah will teach you to think outside the box. You are going to be stretched to think of things differently than you ever have before, to perceive things from a totally different perspective. And that stretching is uncomfortable, but that stretching is necessary. Always think outside of the box. Now I'm going to say, you've been taught about the nine dots outside the box. Now using the thought of outside the box, how would you connect all nine dots with one stroke, with one line?
I just want to say you would just connect them all simultaneously.
Use a paintbrush. It's thick enough to cover all nine. Think outside the box.
Right.
Okay. Tonight's class, and starting next week, we will give you actual tools. And the tools come out of this class. But you need the basic class last week to understand that this world is an illusion. And yet at the same time, it's the only tools we have are our senses.
Right.
So we need to use our senses, but we also have to understand that they are meant to confuse us. They are designed to show us the illusion. This class is about the history of Kabbalah. And the history of Kabbalah starts with creation. So let's talk a little bit about science right now. modern science has a theory called the Big Bang Theory. It hasn't been proven. But it essentially says that our physical universe was started by a big explosion. What they don't tell you is that the mathematics of their physics, and mathematics is the language of physics, the mathematics breaks down if you ask the question, what were the conditions 1/10 of a second after the Big Bang? Their mathematics breaks down. They can't answer the question. It's something like 2 seconds or 2.5 seconds that the mathematics works. But before that, they can't deal with it. And also, if we said what was going on before the Big Bang, why did the Big Bang happen, they have nowhere to go. But this is modern science. And Kabbalah has no problem with modern science. Kabbalah agrees with the Big Bang Theory. It actually is true. But we, as we will come to understand, it's a different, somewhat different approach. There is another modern physics theory called the string theory. And the string theory says that all subatomic particles are made up of little entities called strings. And those strings vibrate and make a sound. And different sounds makes different entities. An electron has a different sound than a proton. And a proton has a different sound than a neutron, and so forth. And all of the subatomic particles, everything comes from these strings. And again, Kabbalah agrees with the theory, because in the Torah, in the Bible, it's written, God said there was light, and there was light. But we know God doesn't have a mouth. So where did he say, where did these words come from? Where did the saying come from? How was it transferred? What was the medium of transfer? Like in our world, we have atmosphere. We speak, it gets transferred through the airways, and impacts our eardrums, and so that's how people communicate. So, God said there was light, and there was light. So we agree, sound is the creation tool, just like the string theory says. And there's a third theory that has just recently been promulgated. It's called the M theory. The M theory means membrane theory. And it postulates that the universe was totally void, and that the universes are actually separated by a membrane. And this particular universe was totally void. And along came something that penetrated the membrane. Notice the language.
Mm-hmm.
Penetrated the membrane and ejaculated everything that is in our universe. It's very sexual description, connotation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if we read the Zohar, most of the language of the Zohar is very sexually oriented.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the reasons that people have been saying, don't study Zohar unless you're married. Because unless you're on that level, you're going to find it too stimulating.
Right.
But all three theories, Kabbalah agrees with. All three theories are correct. All three theories are describing different aspects of the process of creation. Each of the theories is not complete. So, the real question that we are talking about is, where do you start? Where did creation start? And the Zohar says that 2,000 years before creation, meaning the physical Big Bang, 2,000 years before creation, God had created the letters. And though he played with the letters imperfect. The Zohar doesn't say to make them perfect. The Zohar says he played with the letters. So why would he be playing with the letters? So let's assume to make them perfect. But that implies that God created something that wasn't perfect. And that can't be, because God is perfect. And everything he creates is perfect. So, where did creation start? And the Zohar is explaining it started with the creation of the letters. Now, the letters are written form, but there's an essence to each letter. There's something that the letter is a paradigm for. So let's use an example, the first letter, and I will stress, you don't have to learn the Hebrew letters. You don't have to go into this detail. But I'm giving it as an example so you understand it. The first letter of the alphabet is the Aleph. It makes the ah sound. It actually is silent. And the vowels, whatever vowel is around the Aleph is what sound we make with it. So it can be A, E, I, O, or U. But the essence of an Aleph is unity. Its numerical value is 1. Affinity. This is the essence of the letter. This is the paradigm of what the Aleph represents. So whenever you see a word that has an Aleph, there is some aspect of unity involved in that word. Depending on if it starts the word or it ends the word or it's in the middle of the word, this all gets modified. But the creation, the moment of creation, is the letters. The letters get put into words. The words get written down. They get read. They get communicated. What was the moment of creation? The moment of creation was the thought of creation. The thought of creation is, the Creator said, I want to be revealed. Into the spiritual world, can you see a ghost? Can you see entities? Can you see auras? Now, there are people who see auras. No question. There are people who play with energies. No question. But in essence, in the spiritual world, we are dealing with not the inability to sense that spirituality. There are people who see ghosts, but for the most part, most human beings are not able to sense that ghosts are around. We don't have the sense, sight, hearing, touch, smell, all of the 5 senses. We refer to it as a 6th sense. So the essence of creation is the Creator saying, I want to be revealed. Meaning, as a spiritual entity, there was no way to sense him. There's no ability for he senses, but we can't sense. And so, when he had that thought, immediately, there comes into creation a world. We call this world Ensof, endless. The world is a vessel. The universe is a vessel. The Creator extended himself. And what we call that extension is light. The Kabbalists say light. Now, what is light? If I take a candle and I light another candle, I have more light. I've expanded the consciousness of light. Have I diminished the first candle? This is why we use the word light. It's constant expansion. It's constant more without any diminishment. The Creator is not the light. The Creator created the light. We can't name the Creator. Rabbi Ashlag, one of the Kabbalists that we follow and teach his teachings, Rabbi Ashlag says, to name something is to define it, to limit it. The Creator cannot be limited. Even when we say Creator, what does that mean? We can't put a name to this entity. So we call it the Creator so that we have something to identify it, but that's not what it is. It's something more, something much more. But again, Rabbi Ashlag says, in our life, in our world, being able to name the Creator is a technique of masturbation. It's not going to help you in your life, so don't waste your time with it. Go ahead.
What is Yahweh?
It's a name that we will come and discuss. It is what we'll discuss it, because it takes a little more discussion. So let's stay where we are in the endless world, which is has two aspects. One aspect is light, and really what light is fulfillment. The Creator extended itself, that's the creation of light. And it created a vessel. The purpose of the vessel is to reveal the light. The vessel has a lack. It desires. It wants. In our world, the only reason we move is because we have a lack. I'm hungry. I get up to go to the kitchen. I'm tired. I get up to go to bed. Do I have to get up to go to bed? No, I can fall asleep on the couch. But it's not quite as comfortable as a bed. Every aspect of lack represents desire. It represents vessel. Every aspect of fulfillment represents light. In the endless world, in the end soul, there is only two aspects, fulfillment and vessel. The endless vessel has every desire that will ever come into existence, has ever come into existence, will ever come into existence. The endless world has two aspects, light, which is fulfillment, and vessel, which is desire. Every desire that ever will come into existence exists in the endless world. That means myself is a desire to receive, a desire. I exist in the endless world. But I'm not the vessel. I'm part of the vessel. You're part of the vessel. He's part of the vessel. The endless world is in total unity. It's described by the phrase, he and his name are one. He represents light, represents fulfillment. His name represents vessel, represents lack, represents receiving. He and his name are one, represents the endless world. Total lack, total fulfillment, no lack. There's total unity. We can't understand this. It's a paradox that does not make sense to us. Because spiritual law says, if there is something different in the consciousness of an entity, then there is a distance between that entity. It's not a physical distance. It's a separation. spiritually something is and something is something else because they don't have the same consciousness. Consciousness defines the relationship between spiritual entities. Lack, desire, receiving is totally different than fulfillment, sharing. Light and vessel are two opposites. How can they be in unity? That's why we don't understand it. That's why it's a paradox. In the endless world, it goes against spiritual law. Spiritual law says there's affinity, there's consciousness. It has to be the same to be in unity. And it's clearly fulfillment and reception, receiving, are two opposites. And this went along for eons. The light and the vessel are in unity for eons. This world consists of total serenity. The instant the lack was sensed, the light didn't let you sense it. It fulfilled it. So you never felt lack. You were constantly receiving fulfillment of what you needed, what you wanted that you didn't even know you wanted. This was the condition in the endless world. Sounds like nirvana. Sounds like the place we'd all want to go to. We don't have lack. We're just fulfilled. For eons, this went on. And then what happens in all spiritual law? The vessel takes on the attribute of what fulfills it. We are what we think. We are what we eat. We eat food, we eat crap, we become crap. We think horrible things, we become that. In the spiritual world, you are what you think. The vessel is constantly being fulfilled by the light. What is the attribute of the light? What is the nature of the light? It's to share. By definition, light wants to expand. It wants to share. A vessel, by its nature, is going to limit the light. It can only be shared to the extent of the vessel. But this is an endless vessel. There is no limitation. Another paradox we don't understand. After eons, the vessel starts to take on the attribute of the light. It starts to say, I want to share. I want to be light. I want to do what you do. I don't want to be different than you. That makes me less than you. I want to be you. That consciousness is like a desire, or the metaphor that I use is the unstoppable force meets the immovable object. The light wants to fulfill the desires of the vessel. And now the vessel has a desire that says, I don't want to be fed. What does the light do? I don't want your fulfillment. Why does the vessel say, I don't want your fulfillment? If I take you to lunch today, and we have an absolutely beautiful meal, and we have wonderful conversation, and we leave the lunch truly satisfied and happy. I picked up the check as I walked out. We walked out the door. Let's do this again tomorrow. Absolutely, it's great. Come back tomorrow. We have another wonderful lunch, another beautiful meal, great conversation, total wonderful feeling. We get up to leave, and I pick up the check. We do this day in and day out and day in and day out for a year. How do you feel? You want to participate once in a while? You want to pick up the check one time in a year? I'm picking up the check every day. You're not. How do you begin to feel? You have a wonderful time. You have wonderful conversation. But you haven't earned it. You haven't participated. You're not sharing. The nature of the light is to share. The vessel is taking on the nature of the light. It wants to share. But in the endless world, there's only one vessel. There's nobody to share with. It can't share back to the light because the light has no desire. It has no lack. It's only fulfillment. This is the moment of creation. This moment is called Tsimtsum. This moment is described as the light withdrew within itself and created an empty space for the vessel to share with other parts of the vessel. When the light was there, the vessel couldn't see that there were components of the vessel. It couldn't sense there was only one vessel. It couldn't sense the differences. But when the light withdrew, now we sense lack. I can sense that my desire is different than your desire. This is the Tsimtsum. And it's a paradox, because the light is everywhere. God is everywhere. There's no place that God isn't there. So how can he not be there? It's a paradox. We don't understand it. But this is the moment of creation. This Tsimtsum, this withdrawal into himself, that really isn't a withdrawal. It's a concealment from us. This paradox is the moment of creation. And all paradoxes come from that moment, the creative process is a paradox. How does light that is fulfillment create a vessel that is receiving? Paradox. We don't understand it. But this was the moment of creation. And the creation came down world by world, step by step. It created a world called the endless world. It created a world called the world of emanation. It created a world called the world of creation. It created a world called the world of formation. It created a world called the world of action. The world of action is our physical world. We in the physical world are the endless vessel, but separated so that we perceive desires from each other differently. There's no affinity between my desire and your desire. That's why you're separated from me. Now, in the physical world, I can take opposites and make them close together. I can take a stick and put it in a refrigerator on one end and put it on fire in the other. I can take opposites and make them be close together. In the spiritual world, I can't. So, we have this moment, and that's why we agree with the Big Bang. That's why we agree with the idea of the strings. And the idea of the empty universe that was ejaculated into, because that moment, everything came into being. Now, it took 15 and a half billion years, or maybe 13 and a half. They keep changing their number. But, of course, in the Bible, it says 7 days of creation. So how do we reconcile that? Very simply. A day is not a 24-hour day. A day represents a sphira, something that's part of the tree of life, a consciousness. The day of the first day of creation is Sunday. What is Sunday? It's about unity, about loving kindness, about affinity. What's the second day of creation? Monday. You want to know why Mondays are blue? Why do we call it Blue Monday? Why does everybody have problems on Monday? Because the essence of separation was created on Monday by virtually having two, something different than one. The number two is something different than one. It has a lack because it's not one. And so forth through the 7 days of creation. These are entities. These are consciousnesses. So now we come into the physical world. And we come into this situation which we call Adam and Eve. Now, actually, Adam and Eve were created somewhere else other than the physical world. They were created in the Garden of Eden. And they were put in the Garden of Eden. And Adam was given a statement, do not eat from the tree of knowledge, good and evil. The whole purpose of that statement was for Adam to not, was to remove the feeling of bread of shame. I forgot to mention that feeling of receiving lunch every day that you didn't earn. The words in the Hebrew are lechem mizayon, bread of shame. The more you eat, the more shame you feel. The more you consume, the more uncomfortable you become because you didn't earn it. Is this a real feeling? Is it true? Is it? No, it's not. It's a feeling by the vessel that it's not God. It's not the light. Is it a real feeling? Is it appropriate feeling? How do you argue with a feeling? I hate you. I love you. How do you argue with a feeling? You feel what you feel. The vessel feels bread of shame. This world and its purpose is to remove bread of shame in the endless world so that we can return to the endless world and live in serenity without feeling this bread of shame. So in this world, we need to do actions that remove bread of shame, which means we have to earn what we receive. And that's the conditions of this world. Please.
In the conditions of this material world.
Conditions of this material world. In order to receive, you have to earn. We've had societies, communist society that says, I'm going to give you whatever you need because the whole society is going to take care of you. Didn't work, but it's actually the goal. But we'll get into that in another way. It didn't work because they left God out of the equation. The second aspect, or the vessel has come down to be Adam and Eve. That means within Adam and Eve is every soul that ever will exist in this physical world. Every soul that ever did exist in this physical world. These souls, you and I, are part of Adam. Some of us are in the neck of Adam. Some of us in the voice box. Those are people who sing well. Some of those people are fast runners. They're in the legs of Adam. Some of those people are stronger. They're in the arms of Adam. Some of those people are in the see better or are involved with wisdom. They're in the, from the eyes of Adam. All of us were within Adam. We all have aspects of that. And we all participated in the chet of Adam, the sin of Adam, the mistake of Adam. Judaism does not see sin like Western civilization. Mm-hmm. Western civilization, because of the influence of the church, sees sin as hell and brimstone. It sees sin as unfixable. It sees sin the way it sees sin. Judaism sees sin as you shot an arrow and missed the mark. You made a mistake. It's fixable. Not a problem. Let's go fix it. And this world is a world of tikkun, the Hebrew word for correction. We all participated in that sin. We all come again in this lifetime with the opportunity to correct that mistake, however we participated it. If we were part of the legs, Adam walked up to the tree. So we participated in the walking. Our correction will be dealing with something having to do with walking, with movement. And we can go on and on, which we don't have time to do. We come into this world, and there's a simple regulation. We made an agreement as the endless vessel. We don't want to receive food from you, light. We don't want to receive fulfillment from you, light, unless we've earned it. So we have a simple rule in this world. If I didn't earn it, I can't keep it. You know who are the most unhappy people in the world? The children of the wealthy. They don't feel they earned it. They're living back in the endless world. The children of the wealthy, when they go out and earn their own, they make investments, whatever, then they can become happy. But until they get to that point, the parents will want to give them everything for whatever their reasons are. The physical world exists to correct the mistakes that we've made in previous lifetimes. The physical world exists to remove bread of shame. God has given us 6,000 years to remove bread of shame. What happens if we don't? So let me give you a very chilling example. This is the year 5771. We only have 229 years left. We've almost come to the end. What is the end? You've all heard the prophecies. You know what the end is. It's called Armageddon War. It's called chaos, destruction, horrible pain and suffering. That's the end. Oh, but there's another end. There's an end that says the lion will lie down with the lamb. The end where everything is perfect. And life on this earth is heaven on earth. Total fulfillment, like the endless world. We will share with each other. We will earn. We will remove bread of shame. Total endless serenity. That's the purpose of creation. Each of us has a job to do in this creation. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been created. That ejaculation wouldn't have included us. And it does. We come into this world in order to achieve correction. Each of us has a correction to make. Actually, two corrections. One, that we share with the other people in our nation. One that only we can do. You can do something that I cannot do. You are absolutely superior to me in that respect. I can do something that you cannot do. I am absolutely superior to you in that respect. Cause and effect. Since we're all necessary, we're all equal. But if I give you a 4-ounce cup or a 12-ounce cup, and I fill both of them to the brim, totally fulfilled, what's the difference between the cups from the cup's perspective? They're the same. They're fulfilled. That's the way we need to see people. They're the same. I'm not better, nor am I worse. There are times when I'm worse, when I'm not doing my work, my spiritual work, then I'm worse than someone who is doing their spiritual work. I am better than someone if I'm doing the spiritual work and someone else is not. What is spiritual work? Removing bread of shame. Actions of sharing. Actions of earning the light. This is the purpose of creation. We have 229 more years to go. We have the choice of allowing Armageddon to happen or bringing it peacefully. It's going to happen. We cannot control that. That's the plan of creation. But it doesn't have to happen with pain and suffering. That's what we are in control of. This is what Kabbalah brings to the table to teach you. It gives you this information of world history. All 6,000 years is to achieve this one result. There was a creation before this. Another 6,000 years. This is the second one. Does there need to be more of them? Does it matter in my life today to answer that question? Or are you masturbating with curiosity? You have to ask yourself, what's the reason behind my question? Cause and effect. What comes first, the question or the answer? In our world, it looks like the question comes first. Because you never get an answer until you've asked a question, correct? But the truth is, the answer wants to be revealed, and it communicates to your higher self. Have him ask the question. Have her ask the question. Now I can be revealed. There's a vessel for my revelation. The Creator created this world through Tzimtzum, through paradox. We know why we're here, to remove bread of shame. We don't know how to remove bread of shame yet. That's what the Torah, the Bible, teaches us. How to remove bread of shame? By acting and interacting in certain ways. For 6,000 years, 5,771 years, Kabbalah was concealed. There were people who were given this information. People, souls who could understand it. Go back 300 years. We're in Eastern Europe, and we're working on a farm in Eastern Europe. There's no television. There's no computers. There's no cars. There's horse and buggy. And we go up to the farmer and we describe the computer, the flat screen TV. What does he say? Magic. Mystical. Loco. Get out of here. I don't need this crazy person around. This is why Kabbalah was concealed, because people couldn't understand it. Because what's in the Torah? The description of a computer. What's in the Torah? Every physical principle. The Big Bang Theory? In the Torah. The M Theory? In the Torah. the string theory in the Torah. You in the Torah. You're written in the Torah. And the Torah is built on the 22 Hebrew letters. The purpose of creation is to remove bread of shame, to reveal the light, to earn eternal light, eternal fulfillment. Everybody is going to earn it, whether it comes with peace or it comes with pain and suffering, where we are all returning to the endless world, because if we didn't, we weren't there to begin with. There's never a change in the endless world. There's never a change in God. It's only changing us to be what we were in the endless world without the feeling of bread of shame, because the feeling wasn't real. This is a creation. 6,000 years, we're almost done, only 200 more to go, and I'm going to be alive all of those years. And each and every one of you will have that choice as well. Next week, we will start by giving you tools. The tools are the Hebrew letters. The Hebrew letters that work in a way that is not logical. They work. The tools work. Remember what I said. Do not ever believe a word I say. But please try what I suggest. That's the essence of what we're talking about. The Hebrew letters will give you, will teach you how to say them in words. We'll ask you to memorize them. We'll ask you to say them. And you'll say, what am I doing? This is absolutely foolish. There's no logic to this. Are you asking me to say something in a language I don't understand? And you're telling me it's going to change me? What do we say the adage is? What are your eyes? The window to your soul? Now I'm going to tell you that the Hebrew letters were designed to transfer metaphysical energy. They're also designed to transfer physical energy, but let's not go there. Just metaphysical energy. So what happens when you look at a Hebrew letter? It changes you. What happens when you change? There's 6.5 billion human beings on this planet. Each of them is connected to you. You change yourself, you change them. You want world peace? Change yourself. You want to fix the problems with the ecology? Change yourself. You want to fix economic problems? Change yourself. You want to fix healing, health problems? Change yourself. Change yourself, you change the universe. Try and change the universe, and you're not changing yourself. You're not changing yourself, you're not doing your spiritual work. And you came here to remove bread of shame, which means doing spiritual work. Yes.
Are you, when you're doing this, are you seeing any closer of being of the world as opposed to being in the world when you're approaching it in this way?
Being of the world and being in the world. We are in the world, but we're actually in five different worlds at the same time. And the difference between the angels and humanity is humanity is supposed to live in all five worlds simultaneously and have the consciousness in all five worlds. That's what we call our unconscious. Our unconscious is in our upper worlds. our unconscious is supposed to be where we are.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a world where we're separated. We don't perceive the upper worlds,
mm-hmm.
but we need to learn how to, and that's where the letters will help us. I promise you that if you use the tools, you will have a personal experience of the Creator, of the light, of the fulfillment. For some people, that means a meditative personal experience where they travel out to God knows where. And for other people, it means they stay on Earth and they interact with another human being and fall in love to such a level and in such a unity that that's sufficient for them. Each person has a different desire. And based on your desire is where you will manifest your removal of bread of shame. There's a verse in the Torah. I will return them, even if they are in the outer reaches of outer space. Nobody reads it like that, but that's what it says in the Hebrew. It doesn't say outer space. When we get to it, if you ever want to look at it, I'll show it to you. But it's clearly saying, man travels to the stars, I'm going to return you from there. Because your job is to go to those stars and go to those upper worlds, but in the way that you remove bread of shame, in a way that you earn the process. Every scientific discovery, every philosophical improvement, every aspect of humanity is not discovered or invented by anybody. They're all revealed to them by their higher selves. There was a man who taught the periodic table in chemistry. That's amazing. Where did you learn it? I saw it in a dream.
I love it.
Albert Einstein, absolute genius. Theory of relativity, except it's not yet complete. The Kabbalists have taught it in a much broader sense. Did he discover anything? Did he invent anything? He revealed a physical truth, a physical law. It's still a theory, because they don't know how to prove it. This is what Kabbalah will teach you. Everything that was potentially known is known. Just because I don't know it doesn't mean it's not there.
So it was given to him.
Yes. And it was actually given to him 2 years earlier, but not in a direct way. It was given by a Kabbalist, Rabbi Ashlag, who described the theory of relativity in his Kabbalistic writings.
Mm-hmm.
2 years later, Albert Einstein got it out of the cosmos,
mm-hmm.
and wrote it down.
Mm-hmm.
And the world honors him. And it should. He's a unique individual. The world should honor you. The world should honor you. You each, unique individuals. You have something to do that no one else in the world can do. That's an amazing statement. It's an amazing knowledge. You don't feel good about yourself? Wake up. You can do something I can't. Why are you feeling down? You made a mistake? Get up and do it again. That's what this world is for. Shoot the arrow. Miss the mark, shoot it again, see if you can hit it. Of course, make the adjustment so that you're not constantly missing the mark. Are there any questions? Okay. On the conference call, are there any questions? You need to hit *6 to be able to be heard. We'll see you next Monday at 7:30. Unless you have more questions, I'll answer more questions.
Oh, Yahweh is a different expression. And the great I Am is a different expression as well.
I'm not familiar with I Am.
Oh.
So give me that one. Tell me what that's all about.
I'm not sure. That's what I'm asking you.
Okay. There are attributes of the life. One of those attributes is named Elohim, Elohim.
Mm-hmm.
That's the name that was used in the Bible to for the 7 days of creation.
And what is that?
Elohim means El, the first part of the name means God. Okim means plural. So, but there's only one God, so what am I saying, plural God? Elohim is an attribute of justice, judgment. That's what the world was created with, judgment. There's another attribute called Shaddai. The Big Bang took place, and God said, Shaddai, enough. And that will be, when it reaches that point, it will start to fall back in on itself as part of the Big Bang Theory. They're not sure if it will, but that's the discussion. An attribute of God called Shaddai. Enough. Limitation. And then there is a name we call the Tetragrammaton. We do not speak it because it's too powerful in our world. If you say this name, you manifest all of the power of creation in an unbalanced way.
Mm-hmm.
That name represents the attribute of mercy. That's why we all want that. Because in a perfectly strict, judgmental world, if I steal, my hand falls off. I commit adultery, another part of me falls off.
Mm-hmm.
This is not good things,
mm-hmm.
as we can all agree on that.
Right.
Judgment is not an easy aspect. There are 72 names of God, 3 letters each. They represent attributes of God.
Mm-hmm.
The energy of healing is an attribute of God. The energy of time travel is an attribute of God. You want to know how to time travel? I do it all the time. You want to know how to travel without an airplane? I go visit Jerusalem every morning.
Wow.
How am I doing that? Consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And tools. Do you believe me? If somebody sitting right next to me never sees me leave, do I have to be gone for you to know that I'm gone? Or in that instant, while you blinked your eyes, I left and came back. What works? What's truth? Cause and effect. This is what the tools will allow you to proceed. Thinking outside the box. Recognizing the different attributes of the Creator. God has different names. The Kabbalists joke and says, what, he's a member of the mafia? He has different names. Why? Because each name is an attribute. What does it mean to be God? It means to be kind. It's an attribute. It means to be just. That's an attribute. It means to be all-powerful. That's an attribute. It means to be perfect. That's an attribute. It means to be false. Is there falseness in God? There isn't. But how do we perceive it? In our world, we have a system that was created that gives us free choice. That system is called Satan, the negative side. We perceive negative and positive as being equal. That's what gives us free choice.
Mm-hmm.
If we knew that this is coming from God, and this is coming from the negative side,
mm-hmm.
And if we could see that with our senses, would we ever choose the negative side? Well, there are people who choose the negative side out of choice. If somebody tells you, go take a bath, you bristle. You don't want to take a bath. The 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, that's the constant fight with parents. Well, I'm 63 and I'm still fighting with God. He tells me to do something and I bristle. I know what to do. This is part of being human. It's part of what you can choose to change. By choosing to change, you remove bread of shame. And you bring that Armageddon war with peace and serenity.
Well, I'm just thinking that you have to hear God first.
You do have to hear God. But we all have heard him. Just go to any church on Sunday, and hail and brimstone is being yelled at you. Those are his words.
I'm not hearing God in that way.
Thank God you don't hear him that way. But that is the way it's been presented through the generations.
Right.
Because religion serves a purpose.
Right.
The religion serves the purpose of bringing the rule book, the Bible, across the generations intact without change. Knowing how to use the letters has to be perfect. Otherwise, you bring negativity. This is all part of the system. The religions serve the purpose. Each of the other religions serves a purpose.
Right.
Cause and effect. Make your choice. Learn. Kabbalah is being revealed in our generation because we're running out of time, and we need it to give us a clearer picture to the choices we need to make.
So has Kabbalah been introduced because of, when you keep saying running out of time, do they take into account the December 21st, 2012?
December.
Is there anything in there as well? Or is that
everything is in there.
Okay. Let
me give you a question. Give you an explanation, and you're going to throw me out of here because it does not fit with society.
Right. Uh-huh.
But my name is Hanoch, and everybody knows about the Hanoch who walked with God. In the English Bible, they translate the name Hanoch as Enoch. So Enoch walked with God. Hanoch walked with God. What people don't read is in chapter 4, it says, Cain built a city and named it after his firstborn, Hanoch. Where was that city built? How about South America with that landing strip on the mountaintop? How about the Mayan Indians with their blood human sacrifice technique? How about the Mayan Indians with the calendar that ends on December 21st, 2012? What's the source of this? It's in the Torah. What's the source? Is it the world ending or is it beginning? Your choice. Rabbi Ashlag writes that the Mashiach will manifest in the year 2018. Yes, are we supposed to follow his lead? He tells us very clearly, don't live your life as if it's going there. Live your life. There's a wonderful, wonderful story about a sage lived about 300 years ago. And they asked him, they're coming running into his room while he's studying. The Mashiach's coming, the Mashiach's coming. He gets up, he goes to the window, he opens it, he breathes in the air, he smells,
Sure, it's not here yet. Go back to work. Rebbe, why did you spell? When I study, Mashiach is here. But in the outside world, he will come with the smell. You think Mashiach's coming? Go do your work. He'll let you know if he arrives. Don't pay attention to somebody who says Mashiach's coming. Mm-hmm. So that's not the issue. Our issue is to remove bread of shame. Mm-hmm. Our issue is to stay focused on our spiritual work.
Right.
Our issue is not to run after some human being who says this is the path. The path is clear. The path is that still small voice within us that we don't hear it. The tools that you'll be given will help you hear it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We'll see you next Monday.